everyone, and thank you for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Quick science lesson for those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. But that's not enough. It then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order to make its wings strong enough to take it everywhere it's going to go once it's out. None of that can be easy, I imagine, but neither is busting through limits that society places on us. And today I'm going to be bringing a guest on who's going to talk to us about dyslexia and a program that is happening across the state of Illinois. And before we bring her on, though, I do just want to remind you, if you are watching, hashtag live, give us, oh my gosh. Okay. Hang on a second. Running hashtag no limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. And hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. I believe, oh my gosh, what is wrong with me? Hello and welcome to hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. I believe that the caterpillar turning into the butterfly is the best example of that. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and reforms into the butterfly. But that's not all. It then has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough to take it everywhere it's going to go. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, and I think the example I just shared with you is the best and most beautiful example of that. But it's not easy, and it's not easy to bust through societal limits either. I'm going to bring to you today Shira Raviv Schwartz of Everybody Reads Illinois, and she's going to talk to us about dyslexia and a bill that is being talked about here in Illinois, and hopefully something that can be started around the rest of the country as well. But before I bring her on, I just want to remind you, if you are watching, give us a hashtag and where you're watching from, and also make sure that you like, subscribe, and share so that other people can listen and learn from Shira and all of the wonderful guests that I have. So without further ado, let me bring on Shira. Welcome, Shira. How are you doing?
Great. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
So I got involved in this work many years ago. I started as a teacher, and I was actually a Hebrew language teacher. And when I was teaching Hebrew, the classes were tracked. So they had given me the lower track of students. There was a low, middle, and high group. So I had the low group. And in that work, I started to reach out for help to the general studies teacher and say, you know, it seems like all of my students have some sort of learning disability. I want to do what you do and teach them the Hebrew language that I was teaching the way she was teaching literacy skills. So I watched what she did. I kind of developed my own method of doing that for teaching Hebrew. After 10 years, I switched to general studies. And then I became certified in a reading program called SLANT. It's a structured literacy program. I'm sure we'll talk lots more about that. And after 25 years, I stopped working in the classroom and became an educational advocate. So now I advocate for students with all kinds of issues, including dyslexia, autism, anxiety, depression, ADHD, and, you know, mental health issues that are, happening primarily since COVID. So that's what I do currently is advocate for students. And I am also currently the president of the president-elect of Everyone Reading Illinois, Illinois' Dyslexia Association.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for all of that work. And teaching Hebrew, that I have to say, you're the first person I've ever, I think, even known, let alone being a guest on Hashtag No Limits, that taught Hebrew. That's a really interesting language. And I don't think it's a really easy language to learn.
Well, you do have to learn. It has, you know, it, first of all, you read from right to left. So it's different than English. And then in Hebrew, the you have consonants, but the vowels are separate. So they're underneath the consonants. So I actually, I grew up speaking Hebrew because one of my parents is Israeli. And my conversational Hebrew was perfect, pretty fluent, but my reading was poor. And this is how I always tell people that I believe, because I don't decode well in that language, that I am dyslexic. Because when I read without vowels, so you take the vowels out, I can read pretty fluently in Hebrew. But that's kind of the same as like in English when, you know, when a couple of words are missing, but you know what the word is, you're not really decoding. You're kind of sight reading. And so I think that's what I probably learned how to compensate for in English and did very well with that. I was an English major in college and, you know, I got through school just fine. But in Hebrew, my reading was really, really slow. So we had reading games, who can read fastest. And I was always like the last one picked on the team. But everybody wanted to partner with me for other things because I was fluent and I knew all the answers. So, you know, fast forward many years, I have three children. I became certified in structured literacy when my youngest child was one. Little did that he would end up being profoundly dyslexic. So even now, he's 21. He's a college student. He goes to University of Wisconsin. He's pre-med, and he's a non-reader. So I did a lot of his struggles throughout the years have been pretty significant. He was in 8 different schools, 7 before he was 12. That's where I kind of honed my advocacy skills, because I really, you know, tried to get him the right supports and services that he needed. And because I knew a lot about literacy, I was able to do that pretty well for him. And then people were asking me, oh, can you do that for me and my son and my daughter? And I'm like, no, because I teach school. And then I was like, maybe I should do that. So then I stopped teaching and I thought I was moving into helping people one by one by one with their, you know, personal child. And then once I turned 50, I sort of moved into, that's great to help people one by one. But it's also great to help everyone in our state. So I've been involved with Everyone Reading Illinois for at least a dozen years at this point, and have served in various roles. We do a lot of teacher professional development. We have parent conferences, and we, you know, in general support people who, you know, are dyslexic or struggling readers throughout the state with various supports. So I don't think I really just did it for my son. I think I he really didn't like my advocacy for him because he just felt like I was telling him he wasn't very smart. I mean, that's the reality of many people who are dyslexic. When you know, you want to help them, it's shameful. They live in shame because they struggle. And so once they're reached the right way with the right kind of supports, their world can really open up. So we've done a lot of, you know, great work in Everyone Reading Illinois, and I'm excited to share some of those things with you.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's first, before we get too far into this, give a definition and maybe even some examples, because I think people have an idea of what dyslexia is. And I believe that a lot of that is incorrect. I've had several different people in the last, I guess, year or so that have come on to talk about dyslexia, because I'm hoping that with all the different people that, you know, the word will get out there what dyslexia really is and how it can look in different people. And, you know, that it has nothing to do with intelligence whatsoever. And so, yeah, if you would just give us a definition of what dyslexia is and then some of those examples.
So in a nutshell, dyslexia is basically an unexpected difficulty in reading in relation to someone's intelligence. The actual definition that everyone reading Illinois uses is the definition from the International Dyslexia Association. And it is that dyslexia is a learning disability that's marked by an impairment in the ability to recognize and match sounds with written language, with written letters and words. It's a neurological disorder, and it's characterized by an unexpected difficulty in reading by children or adults who otherwise should be able to read, who have intelligence, motivation, oral language proficiency, but yet are, you know, struggling to read. So a great example of that is, you know, like my son. He has high IQ, but he's a struggling reader. So it's hard to align that. It's hard to kind of understand that. Well, if he's smart and intelligent, why can he not read? So you're correct. There are a lot of, you know, myths around dyslexia. It is not due to a lack of intelligence. It is not due to a lack of motivation. Can be a global language processing issue. It's not due usually to poor instruction. It's also not due to, you know, socioeconomic level. People can learn to read if given the opportunity. So there are kind of a couple of parts to it. There's the phonological processing part and the orthographic processing part. Phonological is the ability to use the sounds that make up the words that someone is reading. And the orthographic process is the ability to retain and retrieve the way the words look in print. So orthographic processing has more to do with the encoding or the spelling pieces of it. People with dyslexia generally struggle to acquire early literacy skills, letter names, sounds, rhyming. They have trouble with, you know, even, you know, easy kind of Dr. Seuss books, those rhyming books, have trouble hearing those sounds. Often have challenges with rapid naming, with spelling. Dyslexics can often have strong comprehension, but yet they read slowly. So that kind of characterizes what dyslexia is.
I have had former students that have had diagnoses of dyslexia, and they have, not all of them, but a few of them have told me that you know, I think one of the myths about dyslexia is you're seeing the letter backwards or you're seeing the number backwards. And from what people that I have spoken to with dyslexia have said to me is that it's not a letter. It could be an entire word. But also I've had some people tell me that the sentences will sort of come together or the words come together and then the person's brain has to decipher, you know, if it's saying this is, they'll see T-I-T-H-I-S-I-S all as one word, and they'll have to figure out where the separation is. Have you had experience, anyone tell you that, or is there any studies?
I always tell people that the, you know, they're like the top five myths of dyslexia, and one of them is that dyslexia is a vision issue. And it's really not. There is a very big difference between vision issues, which there can be vision issues, but even remediating vision issues is not going to teach you to learn how to read. So you're still going to have to learn how to read. What I find is probably a reason why people or people say that, you know, letters are jumping off the page or reversals or B's or D's, you know, P's and Q's mm-hmm. is really because of the rapid naming issue and the issues with that matching the sounds to the letters. So they look alike, they're not alike. Mm-hmm. And with rapid naming, sometimes that inability to pull up what it is at play. I also find that dyslexic students, often people say they have tracking issues. So what you're talking about is either the words are smushed together the teacher says, well, their eyes aren't looking at the words as they're reading them or whatever it is. What I find is that dyslexic students, and I tutor dyslexic kids, so I see this all the time, that they are working overtime to try to just read what's on the page. And so they're going to use any clues they have. They're very used to using compensatory strategies to figure out what they're reading. That may mean that their eyes go to the end of the sentence, and then they kind of get the gist of it. They can guess at a word, or they can mm-hmm. use context to say or pronounce a word, even though they're not decoding it. So I find that that happens a lot. I actually have to unlearn or unteach kids that's not the way we read, and that you can slow it down and you can read and can use your decoding strategies to do that. So it really is not a vision issue. And I also know this because I asked my son's eye doctor, how come you've never diagnosed him with a vision disorder or a vision issue? He's dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And he's because those are two different things. He certainly says I have patients that come to me that have vision issues, but mm-hmm. that's not dyslexia. So that's what I can say about dyslexia. It really is one of the biggest myths I've often had teachers say to me, he's not dyslexic. He doesn't confuse his B's and his D's. I'm like, well, that's nothing to do with it. So.
Right. And yeah. And that's why, like I said, I've had several guests in the last 8 to 12 months about dyslexia, because I know here in Illinois that we have a kind of a dyslexia handbook that was put out by the State Board of Education that kind of gives us guidance of some strategies and tips to implement in the classrooms, and also, you know, things to look for to help us know if somebody should be evaluated for special education. And just for those who may not know, dyslexia, and you mentioned this earlier, does fall under the umbrella of specific learning disability. And a lot of states across the country, and even here in Illinois, a lot of districts still do not like to put the word dyslexia on the IEP if the student is found eligible for a specific learning disability. But they absolutely can. And so what would you say are the pros and cons to just leaving the umbrella term of specific learning disability versus having that and dyslexia specifically noted as the specific learning disability?
So a couple of things. First, I'm glad you mentioned the dyslexia handbook. So it was put out by the Board of Education, written by people like me. So I actually served on the committee who I didn't write the initial version of it. People from Everyone Reading Illinois were involved in the writing of that initial document. But I have served on the committee of the last two revisions of the dyslexia handbook. So it is a work in progress always, and it will continue to be as we learn more and more about dyslexia, about interventions, and about supports. And that's always changing, especially with technology. So that document is a great document to begin to look at as a, you know, roadmap of sorts for both teachers and for parents or caregivers. And as far as the umbrella term of specific learning disability, there are, you know, disability categories. We can't have, I think it would be very difficult to, first of all, dyslexia is in the state code. The word dyslexia is in the state code. Everyone reading Illinois worked hard to get it in the state code, so it is in there. But with regard to special education eligibility, I think if we tried to pull out every subcategory of disability under specific learning disability, it would be very confusing. So I personally am not one of those people that is hashtag say dyslexia, although I know many people that are, and I understand why they feel that way. But specific learning disability is the overall term, the umbrella term. And then underneath it, it is always categorized as in what. So it can be a specific learning disability in comprehension, in decoding, in encoding, in vocabulary. It can be math. It can be calculation. It can be operation, conceptual knowledge. So, you know, those subcategories are in there because they need to align to a specific goal of what the deficit area is. So for now, I'm okay with the umbrella term as long as it's categorized underneath. And there are boxes to check in on an IEP of what the specific learning disability is. So hopefully right. That answers it.
Yeah. And I have the dyslexia handbook. I'm going to pull that up. I have it minimized on my, well, it's a shortcut, I should say, on my computer because I have referenced it so often and it's just easier now for me to do it that way. But in doing that, what I realized, because I was going to share the link, is I don't have the link to share. So if you don't mind, what I want to do is, you know, maybe have you just talk about it a little bit, what's in the handbook and, you know, how people can utilize it. And then I'm going to try to get the link really quick so that I can share that as well while you're kind of talking about the handbook itself.
Okay. Well, the handbook, it's a little complicated because the handbook is actually, you can get to it by just looking up Dyslexia Handbook for Illinois, but it's also linked to the state literacy plan. So I was also on the committee that wrote the Illinois State Board of Education Literacy Plan. Unfortunately, our entire, and it, again, it was a group of 20 people, and we all have to agree on things. I wanted to go further and further and align it more with dyslexia. It is the literacy state's handbook. But yet it only mentions dyslexia once or twice in the entire document. And one of those is the link to the dyslexia handbook. So the handbook, you know, it really does talk about, you know, if you want to know things about the literacy plan, the laws about dyslexia, characteristics of dyslexia, how the brain learns to read, early signs of dyslexia in terms of what it looks like through the grade levels. It talks about how to screen, what schools do for screening and assessments for dyslexia, then moves into interventions for dyslexia. And then it also shares components of what an effective literacy plan looks like. It describes structured literacy and why that's important. And then, you know, just general information about dyslexia for professionals. It's divided into, can be for professionals, can be for caregivers, So, and administration also. So that's pretty much what's in the handbook.
Awesome. And it's 185 pages long. And I have put the link here on the screen. It is www.isbe.net/documents/dyslexia-handbook.pdf. And I love it. Because as I said, I go to it often. I tell people that it's out here. One of the things that you had mentioned in your introduction was the SLANT curriculum. Is that mentioned in this book? I don't remember for certain.
So there is a page of instructional programs that use structured literacy that are like, quote unquote, approved for, you know, for use. And SLANT is one of those, along with many others, which you've probably heard of, like Wilson. I think, not sure what other ones are in there. That was not a section I worked on, but I mean, right, we had to divide this up. So,
right.
I think that's also in the section. There's an added section of, you know, for more information, links you can click on of toolboxes. It's a toolbox. So it should be in the toolbox section.
Okay.
You know, what programs are kind of not approved, but are, you know, approved by the International Dyslexia Association at this point. So those
are it's such a fabulous document, and I'm just kind of scrolling through it probably too quickly for anybody to really read anything that is here, but it does. It just gives such amazing information. And I think I'm going to stop sharing just so that, you know, because like I said, I'm probably scrolling through it too fast for anybody to read it.
I really think, depending on who you are, if you're a caregiver, parent, look at that section first. You don't have to read the whole thing.
Right.
If you're an educator, there's an educator section. You certainly can look at that section. It really is comprehensive. Look, it started out when I started working on the handbook, it was less than half this size. And now we've grown it because we know that we need more information in there. And there's a lot to know and a lot to learn.
Yeah, it is. It's such a eruption of information as far as dyslexia is concerned, and also dysgraphia, which I know that's not your arena, but and I never pronounce this one right, dyscalculia.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And all of those fall under that specific learning disability.
So being an advocate, I actually, you know, have to kind of spread my expertise across pretty much everything educationally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Unfortunately, I've had 3 kids go through school and, you know, so I know curriculum, like where is a 5th grader, you know, in math in January? Where do they need to be? I can tell you. Like, so, you know, these are the things that advocates learn and are able to know and, you know, support parents with when they say, is my kid, you know, a 3rd grader and they're writing a paragraph. Is that right? You know, and I can say, well, you know, so that would be the dysgraphia pieces. What does it look like? What do they need to know? And what are the supports and interventions that can be put in place to support someone with dysgraphia also? There are comorbidities with dyslexia. Dysgraphia is certainly one of them. It makes it very difficult to be able to, you know, get written work out, produce written work, if you're struggling with your decoding and encoding and you haven't mastered those skills, you're going to be delayed also. So with your written expression. So they really do go hand in hand, and it's really important for educators to, and parents and caregivers to support those skills simultaneously. I recently went to an IEP meeting where the school team insisted that we're not going to work on anything. We're not going to have encoding goals. We're just going to have decoding goals because the student needs to get the decoding down first before they write it. And so I really didn't understand that, because what you do in structured literacy is you do both at the same time. So you right. know that the student has mastered something when they're able to both read it and write it. So the decoding and the encoding piece are partner skills. If you're not able to encode, you have not mastered your decoding, likely. So it really is not best practice to do that. Those skills really need to be working together.
Yeah, and I am also an advocate. And how do we get schools to do what they preach? You know, they talk about follow the science. They talk about, you know, do the research and do what the research says. But we have all of this research that talks about lots of different things, not just this particular part, but yet there are so many schools that I go into these IEP meetings and I feel like these people have been under rocks for ages because they are still doing things that we were doing 10, 15, 20 years ago.
So I never fault teachers for the fact that their administration may not be supporting them with what they need to learn, and even higher educational institutions that are not teaching it. People need to learn. So when I was going through school, I didn't learn this either. I took it on mm-hmm. myself. That's why I became certified in SLANT and have been a SLANT practitioner for 20 years. So I can tell you backwards and forwards, you know, about the progression of skills that a student will need to learn for both decoding, encoding, written expression, and, you know, literacy skills in general. But I did not learn that in school, unfortunately. And so mm-hmm. I think if you as a teacher or a parent have not encountered Emily Hanford Sold a Story, that really is what it's all about. We've been talking about the lack of all of the things that are lacking with regard to literacy instruction for years. And along comes this investigative reporter who does a much better job at articulating all of these, you know, pitfalls in education than we have done. And now it's become a national problem. So if you haven't listened to Sold a Story, I would, you know, listen to that first and then begin to investigate on your own. What is it and how can we do better? And part of it is, which we do have addressed in our in the Illinois State Board literacy plan, in the new literacy plan. How do we work with institutions of higher education, and what do teachers need to know and be able to do in order to provide proper literacy instruction? And, you know, 95% of the teachers I've encountered are hungry and eager to learn those things. And they, you know, it's a matter of time, money, funding to get them what they need. And so one of the things that we at Everyone Reading Illinois that we've been working on is we figured if we increased the strengthened literacy policy in the state, it would help kickstart a lot of, it would give momentum to, you know, teachers saying, okay, if we're doing this part, then I need to follow through with the next part, and the next part. So what we were trying to do is we had a bill running for the past probably 7 or 8 years on early literacy screening. So 42 states have already passed mandated early literacy screening for kindergarten to second or even third grade in some states, that mandates that every student is screened. A screener is different than an assessment. It's a quick, short, 10 to 15 minute screen to determine if a student is a struggling reader and where the gaps might be, with the intention that there is an aligned intervention that may help keep them out of the special education system. So Illinois is a state that is very much local control. And with local control, people who believe in local control do not believe in state mandates and do not want legislators mandating what teachers need to do. So that bill was very difficult to get passed. We had an opportunity this year to either drop the bill completely or change the bill into a data collection on whether schools are screening for, reading struggles. And it's not screening for dyslexia. It's screening for any kind of struggle with literacy skills. And so the bill passed. It is in the process of moving to the governor's office right now to be signed. I think he had 60 days to sign it. So since it passed, he's probably got another 30 days or so to get it signed. So we're waiting on that. But the bill is a data collection on, and it really just answers, do you screen? What screener do you use? What grades do you do it in? And with what students? So we figured we can either get nothing or we can get that. And we chose to get that in hopes that we learn a lot and we're able to, moving down the road, use that information to strengthen our literacy policy even more. And schools will recognize what they need to do moving forward.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I noticed, and I've seen this before in looking at the dyslexia handbook, that a lot of it relies and draws from the science of reading. And there's so much about the science of reading that when I was a kid and being taught how to read, I feel that a lot of that was the skills and the ways. And then somewhere, between the late 1900s and now, for the last, 20 or 25 years, maybe even longer, there was this shift. And now it's like, oh, okay, now we really do have the science behind that this is the correct way for, I'm not going to say everybody, but more people than the whole language approach and the, I don't know what else, what they've all been called over the years, but I know kind of whole language.
Right. Balanced literacy.
Yeah. So I'm appreciative as an educator, especially, but as a citizen, because if the whole school to prison pipeline, and if that's been talked about before on my shows as well, but just briefly, it's by the time students are in the third grade, depending on how far they are behind in their reading, they say, okay, well, in 15 years from now, we're going to need X number of prisons because this many students are so below in their reading abilities and they're going to turn to crime, basically, is kind of the gist of it. Is that correct?
Yeah. So there is that. A lot of people believe that is, a stat that is, a misinformation or disinformation. I haven't done any specific research on that. What I can tell you is that in the prison system, it is thought that 80% of prisoners are dyslexic or have a learning disability, and that would primarily mean that they are dyslexic. So here's the issue. The issue is that if you can't read, then and you're not taught the right way, then many people would often rather be the class clown rather than the kid who's not smart. And when you start down that path, or when you are shamed, or when you are embarrassed, and when you're not getting the right support, school becomes very hard. You fall behind in your work. You may drop out. And that's where you got to figure out what you're going to do to survive. Then it becomes challenging where you cannot fill out a job application because you can't read it. You can't get health insurance because you don't know how to fill out that form either. Your struggles are compounded over and over again. And what are you going to do? I have worked very hard at trying to get our legislators, and even I live in Lake County, so I've worked with the Lake County Juvenile Justice group, and trying to get them to see that all the kids in the system, if you ask, not all the kids, but many of them, if you ask them, did you drop out of school? Many of them say they did. And then I ask them if they know how to read. And I would imagine that many of them don't. And so that's the reality of, if you can't read, what's in front of you becomes a lot harder to get. And your life, your life, even expectancy is, declines. So there are many problems related to not being able to read. The Barbara Bush Foundation has some excellent work on that. She said, even things like if you can't read a pill bottle, you may take the wrong medication. I mean, this is, it boils it down to that simple. So a lot of stuff out there that you can read about that too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100% agree with that analysis. I've heard it. I've seen it. If you're struggling in school, absolutely. You're going to act out and be the class clown or the, the troublemaker rather than be the quote unquote dumb kid. And I also work with juveniles in the Fourth Judicial Circuit, and I see a lot of them struggling with reading. And absolutely what you said, and what I alluded to before is as a citizen, I want the students to know how to read and to do basic math. And I don't just want them getting pushed from grade to grade to grade because it's easier. Because then, I hate to bring it all the way down to money, because I know that's, something that people talk about all the time. Well, it's just about the dollars. Well, it is about the dollars in this sense, because if we're not providing the schools what they need to educate our students appropriately, they're going to have problems in society as adults, likelier. I mean, it's not guaranteed, but there's a higher likelihood. And so we're going to pay for them in that aspect. So to me, it's much more logical to give them what they need and support them and provide the proper education for them. And that goes even further back to, as you mentioned, getting the higher institutions teaching our future teachers what they really need to reach the students and give the students that appropriate education. And then, it's a very compound issue. It's not, just one, unfortunately, simple, quick fix.
So, we do have, the reason we started working on this bill is because of the NAEP scores in Illinois and how low they were. So, it was around something like only 15% of Black students were reading proficiently, 25% of Hispanic students, and 45% of white students. So, and the numbers were, even 21% of low-income students were, reading proficiently. So if you flip that, it's something like, 85% of Black students are not reading proficiently. 75% of Hispanics are not reading proficiently. Close to 65% of white students. And then it was something like 79% of low-income students. So interestingly enough, last month, Illinois State Board of Education, the head of the State Board of Education, decided that Illinois was going to change the cut score for proficiency level and lower the score so that the numbers will be changed. So, you know, I really was very uncertain how that would teach people to read. And I was very uncomfortable with that. But I think that that the Board of Education passed that bill. So unfortunately, our cut scores are going to be different. And we have, I think the repercussions of that are going to be really, really severe. Because
I do too.
Yes, I think that if you think about it, our teachers are going to be disempowered. Our students are going to be disempowered. It's really going to have a big effect, bigger than they think. And I was just really uncomfortable with that. So
very disheartening. No, thank you for bringing that up. Let's make it look better, but not actually be better.
Yeah.
Is all that's happening.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. And so I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. And that's the politics of education. And I'm bothered by the politics of education because there are people that are arranging education that really don't understand education.
Right. And, I mean,
you know,
it's essentially, if you shift the numbers on paper, it really doesn't change the reality that the fact that our students are not reading at proficient levels. And, you know, far too many students are not reading at proficient levels. We graduate, and I've advocated for students who are moving from eighth grade to high school who cannot read. And that is just a crime. And if they're not reading when they move to eighth grade, they're certainly not reading when they graduate, because you don't teach a student to read in high school with, you know, they're moving on. You know, there is a stat that if you're not a proficient reader by fourth grade, you'll likely remain so until, you know, for the rest of your life. So lowering expectations to me is really something that sends the wrong message. It kind of tells educators that things are more fine than they really are. And it excuses the lack of serious intervention. And it really doesn't support the fundamental, you know, problem we have, which is students need to learn to read. So it's really the students that are going to pay the price for it. And the only people that this serves is maybe our state's Board of Education and the optics of what it looks like. But yes, that should not have happened.
That's so sad. And I mean, just literacy in general, I mean, because everyone reading Illinois, so we really haven't, we've kind of touched on little bits, but I just want to make sure that we've really covered, you know, kind of the purpose and the hope for the organization, Everyone Reading Illinois. So if we can talk about that for a few minutes, just to make sure that, you know, we really get that out there so that everybody understands, they know what Everyone Reading Illinois is about and who can utilize it and what it does and how they can utilize it. That would be awesome.
Okay. So we have, there's lots of things I want to talk about, but I'll go in order. So we do have events. We have virtual PD, professional development, and parents can come. Teachers actually get credit for it, but parents are welcome to come. We have 10 of those a year. They're mostly after our fall conference and from after our fall conference all the way till the end of the school year. So we have great people. So Emily Hanford, who did Soul to Story, was one of those people. They're really touch on all subjects, and they are the top people in the field that we get to do these. And you can look back and see some of the people that we've had. In October, we have our fall conference, and it's really for educators. And it is, I've been to a lot of dyslexia conferences, and I promise I'm not just saying this because it's ours, but we are very selective about who is speaking and what, and we get a lot of proposals. So we have the opportunity to be fairly selective and have really great speakers. We have three parent conferences a year. We have one in central, like Chicago area. We have one downstate close to Springfield area. And like Bloomington Normal areas where we hold that one. And then we have a virtual one that's going to be September 21st. So we always have a virtual one for parents who can't make either of those, but would like to learn more. We have opportunities to engage at the board level or at the auxiliary board level. The auxiliary board is people who may not have time to be on our regular board, but certainly want to participate and help with our efforts. We're a working board. One of the things I'm really proud of is that last year we started a junior board. This is a junior board for young people ages 14 to 22 who started the junior board because I realized when my son, when we were applying for colleges, that he didn't have any extracurricular activities because dyslexia is a robber of time. And he just didn't have time to do to any extracurricular. So, you know, he's in college and it's over for him. But, you know, some of these kids, I want them to be on our board. And I told them, come to one meeting, do one thing for our organization. I don't care what you do. If you don't come to any other meetings, come to one and then put it on your resume because you deserve that. And it's really to get their story out. They have met with legislators and shared their story. They have met with parents and shared their story. Next week, we have our junior board meetings are 30 minutes long. These students are busy. I don't want to keep them more than that. So I keep the meetings to 30 minutes and they're every month to 6 weeks. And, you know, again, they don't have to come to every single one, but the upcoming one is one of our board members who's a neuropsychologist, is going to share how you diagnose dyslexia and what it means for them. Because they may not really understand their report that shared with their parents, you know, you have a diagnosis of dyslexia, what does that mean? So giving them the opportunity to understand that and answer questions or ask questions. So that's some really exciting that we do. And then we also do professional development for teachers and schools and libraries and parent groups in the form of a dyslexia simulation. So it's kind of two parts. What is dyslexia? And then it's a simulation, but it's not to make you feel like you have dyslexia. It's to make you kind of understand what students go through and the challenges they face when they have dyslexia. So that's a really important program. And everyone that we've done that for has said, wow, this is one of the most impactful professional developments we've ever had. So we love putting that one on for people. And if you're interested, all of this stuff is on our website. And I am grateful to you for sharing this website with everybody because it is hard to get the word out. So thank you.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And again, the website is, let me pull it back up. I was doing the junior junior board one. So yeah, it's everyonereadingillinois.org. No spaces, no periods, just everyone reading Illinois, all one word. And if you want more information, you can just go to, or not go to, but you can send an email to info@everyonereadingillinois.org. And if you're interested in connecting directly with Shira, who has been my guest today, her email is shiraravive@gmail.com. She doesn't get the messages that go to info@everyonereadingillinois. So if you want to speak directly to her, make sure that you reach out directly to her. So you've got both emails there, info@everyonereadingillinois, and then her specific one. And again, make sure that you are checking out. Well, okay, my computer and I are not getting along today. Okay, where did the website? There it is. Everyone. Oh, it's scrolling across the bottom. That's what's throwing me off, is it scrolling instead of just being the one banner. I am sorry, folks. I'm having an off day for sure. So I so appreciate all of this wonderful information. And I know that my audience is going to get a lot of great information. Before we wrap up today, I just want to make sure that, you know, when you agreed to be my guest, that whatever you thought we were going to talk about, or what you were going to get to share about, that we have done that today before we say goodbye.
Yes, this is something I'm very passionate about. I think after I turned 50, I sort of focused my energy on, you know, I don't want to be on, five boards. I want to be on one board, and I want to make a mark in this world, in this area. So this is really important. And if anybody wants to join our board, help out, spread the awareness, you know, jump on. We're happy to have you.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. And do you know if there are other things similar in other states, or is Illinois about the only, there are other things. So even if you're watching and you're not from Illinois, how do you think they would go about that? Just reaching to their state board?
Most of the time it's your state's dyslexia association, through like International Dyslexia Association. We're a part of them at one time. Several states have shifted their focus, and they don't want to be under like sort of a national umbrella. They wanted to do their own. Everyone Reading New York has their own. Ohio's is under the Dyslexia Association. So I think you can just, you know, find your local Dyslexia Association. We do a lot of work with neighboring states. So we're very much, you know, aware of some of those. If you have trouble finding yours, send us an email and we will find it for you.
Perfect. And yeah, ladies and gentlemen, it is so important. A couple of weeks ago, my guest was from Read 21, and she has a program that she's developed that she can teach people virtually to read within 21 days, get a lot of you know, basic words down. And so, you know, if we can work together and all these different organizations, that's one of the main reasons I do hashtag No Limits, is because I don't want people's potential to be limited by who they are in that particular time in their life when you interact with them. And for us, especially as educators or society, to look at children and say, oh, they're only going to get to hear, when they could, if they had the right supports, if they had what they needed, they could really go here or beyond. We need to, this is important to everyone in society. It's not just if you have kids in school today, tomorrow, next year, or the year after. It's all of society, as we talked about, being able to read a pill bottle, being able to read the traffic signs, the, you know, because so many of the signs are going digital. So you can't necessarily do it by color and shape. You're going to have to be able to read signs, being able to, you know how to Google something if you have to type it in, and then being able to read whatever it tells you. So all of these things, reading is a part of our lives. And if we can get everyone reading at a basic level, but even higher would be better. That's what we need to do, in my opinion, my humble single person opinion. I think Shira agrees with me.
I have an idea for your next guest.
Okay.
The junior board. You need to have some of those young people on your podcast. Yeah. They would be.
That would be awesome.
Yes. You can invite, you know, a handful of them. They are unbelievable young adults. They are terrific.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yes. I'm happy to connect you with them. And anybody, you know, who's listening to this, if you would like your, you know, young person to join our board, there is a place on the on our website to apply for that.
So perfect. Yep. And I've stopped sharing the website, so I can't pull that back up right away, but just go to that website, everybodyreadingillinois.org, and check that out. And yeah, look for a future episode where members of the junior board will be my guests. So on that note, thank you again, Shira, for being my guest today. And for all of you who joined us, make sure that you are subscribing so you don't miss an episode, but especially not the follow-up episode with some of those junior board members. And remember, guys, we know who we are, but not who we will be. Have a great week.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.